how do you figure out how God has uniquely gifted you? And then what are you going to do with that so that you wake up every day ready to do something that is meaningful, purposeful, and profitable?
Hey everybody, welcome to Repurpose, the show dedicated to inspire you to live a life of purpose, intentionality, and of impact. I'm your host, Jared Sebesta of Teaches Financial Group. We are a retirement planning firm based in West Central Minnesota, where we teach and inspire what we call true wealth. For more information, just check out our website, teachesfinancial.com. Well, on this episode of Repurposed, I'm excited to bring you a conversation I had with Dan Miller. Dan is an accomplished author in this space of life, job, and career living with passion. He wrote the book, 48 Days to the Work You Love and No More Mondays, which I'm a huge fan of both those books. They're great. I highly recommend them. You may have seen him on all the major news outlets, including on the Dave Ramsey Show, which we're big Dave Ramsey fans here at Teaches Financial Group as well. Well, in this podcast, we talk about life and work and career and having impact. And Dan really does a great job of breaking down the difference between purpose, calling, significance, and success, as well as someone's sweet spot compared to their comfort zone. This is a great podcast. It's going to give you some great insight, no matter if you just graduated high school or maybe you are just retired. Here's my chat with Dan Miller. First of all, it's just great to talk with you. I've been a fan of yours for a long time. We are so excited that you decided to endorse the book Repurpose. We are so proud of that fact. So first of all, thank you for doing that.
Oh, I'm certainly honored to do that. I review a lot of books, and if they line up properly with my message, I'm happy to be involved.
Yeah, and that's exactly why we wanted you on the podcast, because you are just a voice of leadership and a big voice in this arena of purpose and high impact living. That's exactly what we're going to talk about today. So thanks again for joining me here. The first things first, let's just get right to the nuts and bolts. You know, people ask that hyper spiritual question, why am I here? You know, what am I doing with my life? How do you go about answering that question for somebody?
Yeah. You know, there are clues. I mean, it is a reasonable question. There's a presentation I do where I start out with, who are you and why are you here?
Yeah.
You know, and that is the kind of voice that we all hear in our head. There has to be more than just paying a mortgage and buying groceries.
Right.
But there's clues all along the way. So you look, I mean, that's the power of having a little bit of life experience. It's easier to answer that question when you're 35 than when you're 18, as an example. So when you start looking back and seeing the things, you know, what are your skills and abilities that are you developing where you, when you're using them, you really feel like you're in the zone? How do you relate to other people? What kind of environments are you most comfortable in? You know, what are those recurring values, dreams, and passions that pop up? And those things, when you look at them, those are realistic clues for then figuring out, wow, this is why I'm here.
Yeah, that's a great point. I think if I think back to my younger days of 18, 21, if you were to ask me that question, I would have a lesser idea than what I do right now at 38, 39. That's a good point. What do you say to that 18, 20, 21-year-old that's kind of trying to figure life out, so to speak?
Here's a quarter. Call me in 10 years. You know, I'm certainly not that cavalier about it, but boy, I'm a big believer in the power of experience.
Yeah.
We learn from the journey.
Yeah.
And artificially, you know, force a 16, 18-year-old to define what they're going to do for the next 35 years is pretty, it's just unrealistic. Life experience helps us clarify. And a lot of times, the first three or four jobs, the primary value is to help us understand what we don't want to do.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So it keeps becoming clear as a result of doing things that we don't want to do. So there's not much that somebody can do that I would consider a mistake. Now, the complicating factor in this, Jared, is when somebody, you know, chooses a college major and then they go right into graduate school and all of a sudden, you know, they're 26 years old and they got an MD or a DDS or JD behind their name. Then they feel like they have no options.
Right.
And a lot, those are the guys that I see, you know, at 42 years old saying, man, I'm living somebody else's dream.
Yeah, that's a good point.
Get me out of this.
Yeah. Is it, you know, to figure out what you want to do for the rest of your life, whether you're, you know, 18 or 38, is that a different conversation than understanding your purpose or your even your calling?
Well, it is. Yeah, that's a great way to frame that because, wow, if we look at calling comes in that category we would consider vocation.
Okay.
I mean, that's the big picture.
Yeah.
That's how you want to be remembered, how you want to make the world a better place. That's the big picture. But then a subset of that, let's take as an example that you want to help reduce pain and suffering in the world. Well, that's a worthy kind of vocation or calling. Okay. So how are you going to do that? Well, the next category down is career. You could be a sports physiologist. You could be a medical doctor. You could be a nurse. You could be a massage therapist. You know, you could be a politician, pastor, teacher, really, and effectively embrace that calling to help make the world a better place or reduce pain and suffering in the world.
Yeah.
Job then is just the smallest component. Job is what you do today to get a paycheck and be responsible and pay the bills. But when we frame it as such, you can see very quickly losing a job should never change your vocation or calling.
Right, right. That's exactly.
So you can go, and that's why I can go back to that, you know, with somebody who is a physician or an attorney or whatever, go back to that when they say, man, this isn't working. That's okay. Let's go back and revisit that original calling, and we can figure out something else you can do as a job and even as a career.
Yeah, that's a great way to put it. You know, I've stumped some people with this question. I just want to hear your perspective on this. What's the difference between purpose and calling, in your opinion?
Yeah, well, calling, yeah, I love that dichotomy because calling is that big picture. You may even feel like you have a calling to, you know, grow dandelions.
Right.
That's fine. But that in itself is not enough. That's empty. There's got to be, okay, what is the connection? What is the value for other people as a result of that? And that's the purpose.
Yeah.
Okay, gee, the purpose is to make people happier, make them feel better, you know, to make dandelion wine or a great salad or whatever. You know, we can go down that path. But purpose is the application.
Yeah.
Calling is the theoretical big picture, but then there has to be an application. It's just like, you know, going to college and getting a lot of knowledge. Knowledge doesn't change your life or anybody else's or your pocketbook. You have to move from knowledge to application and understanding. Hmm. So the same thing is true. Calling is a great starting point, but you very quickly have to move to, okay, what's the purpose? That's the real application.
Yeah, that's a great way. That's a great way to put it. I appreciate that. You talk about the sweet spot. I've heard you talk about that sweet spot between life and work. How do you dissect that? I've read your book, so I kind of have an idea as to what you think about that, but just for our listeners that may not be familiar with you, how do you piece together that sweet spot in life and work?
I love to use the term sweet spot, and I position it as a three-legged stool, and the three legs are talent, passion, and money.
Yep.
If you have any two of those, it's going to fall over. It doesn't work. So you have to have all three. It doesn't matter if you want to be in ministry and do nonprofit, doesn't matter. You still have to have that third leg, money. So if you have talent and you have passion, that's fine. But if that's all you have a hobby.
Right.
You don't have a business. You don't have a career.
Yeah.
You just have a hobby, and that's okay. And that's where a lot of people are challenged. They think, oh, man, you know, God called me to do this, so I don't have to worry about, you know, money coming in. Yeah, you do.
Yeah. You still have to pay the bills, I guess. And
you have to figure that
out.
Right,
right, exactly.
And artistic people often resist that. Well, gee, I just want to play music and just kind of trust, you know, the universe that money's going to come in. Man, you're going to be resentful and angry because it doesn't happen that way.
Yeah.
So that sweet spot, and incidentally, Jared, you know, I distinguish between sweet spot and comfort zone. Sweet spot is not your comfort zone.
Hmm.
People think, well, if I really get these things all in place, man, I can just kind of put it on cruise control. No, that's not where you're doing your best work.
Interesting, yeah.
If you are in a comfort zone and things are just coming kind of easy and, boy, everything is just groovy and 80% of the things that you attempt, you know, happen, that means you're not pushing, you're not stretching, you're not learning, you're not growing.
Hmm.
What I look for is that zone of genius where maybe about 50% of what you do is successful. You know that last year the top 10 NBA players, we just finished the NBA Finals, the top 10 NBA players were paid in excess of $24 million. Okay, so we can do the math on that, blah, blah, blah. Now, you would think, okay, these guys are the very best, absolutely the best. So surely 98% of the shots they take, they make.
Right.
Well, you watch any game. I mean, it can be LeBron James. It can be whoever.
Yeah.
No, the best in the world in that category make 48.4% of their shots.
Interesting, yeah.
That's encouraging to me.
Yeah,
means if I'm really in that zone of genius where I'm growing, I'm stretching, man, I've got about a 50-50 chance if I'm trying new things that I haven't done before that could lead to really wild new success, but I don't want to get too comfortable. So that sweet spot, I qualify that sweet spot with a zone of genius and making sure that people don't think you're just getting to where things are comfortable.
Yeah, that is a great way to put that. I like that a lot. What about a talent? We've had a lot of conversations, even in our office, trying to dissect the difference between a talent and a skill. How would you frame those up?
Well, a talent, I mean, if, you know, did Tiger Woods, you know, was he born with a talent for golf? There's probably something there. Right. That was a little bit of a seed, but he also got his first golf club 5 days before his first birthday. I mean, the hours of practice could make anybody, you know, develop the skill that he has as a golfer.
Right.
Putting that much time. So talent is kind of a little inkling that, wow, this may be something I need to pursue. But skill comes only by developing.
Yeah.
You nurture, you water, you cultivate it. Man, put in your 10,000 hours. Then it can turn into a skill.
Yeah.
Talent doesn't show up full-blown ever. It shows up as just a little indication. Mm. Here's something you may want to pursue, and then you develop the skill.
That's great. When you're trying to dissect or pull out somebody's passion, somebody you're having a conversation with, and you're having this, you know, talk with them, what's a question you ask to try to pull out somebody's passion? Is it something that just drives you or gets you up in the morning? How do you preface that question?
Well, you know, one of my books is Wisdom Meets Passion, and I really looked at that issue, and we tend to think, you know, I often encounter, you know, in a 38-year-old like you who says, gee, I just know what I'm passionate about.
Yeah.
And they kind of think that if they just went in the middle of a field and sat on a stump for a day, you know, or got struck by a bolt of lightning, they know what it was.
Right.
That's not how. Passion is more developed than it is discovered.
Interesting.
So we have to realize, okay, gee, I do enjoy playing basketball. And so you practice 4 hours a day for 5 years. Guess what? Your passion develops as your skill and excellence develop along with it.
Yeah. Do you find go ahead.
No, so it doesn't, you know, sometimes we get the cart before the horse.
Yeah.
Passion doesn't show up before you're all at the same time developing the skill to go along with it.
That's great. It kind of goes back to that 18-year-old versus a 48-year-old. Do you find this easier in older folks, or is it just as, I don't want to say difficult, but is it the same process with an older person compared to a younger adult? What do you think on that? What's your experience?
Well, the process is the same. Hmm. However, it's like walking into a library that has 3 books on the shelves or walking into a library that has 3,000 books on the shelves.
Yeah.
There just isn't anything like a little life experience to give you more from which to draw, make that a richer experience and more clarity as you go along.
Sure.
I'm a big believer in that. So when I talk to, you know, the 55-year-old who just got fired, and he's like, well, you know, I guess I just have to learn to live on Social Security. Are you kidding me? My gosh, now you've got all that wisdom you've accumulated and all the clarity that comes from that. You can go into the most productive 20 years of your life.
Absolutely. That is a great way to put it. I love that. That is so true. And that's in our firm, we work with retirees and we tell them that all the time. You guys have the most to offer this world than arguably any other generation walking on the face of the planet right now. So I love that aligns with what you're saying. That is perfect. I appreciate that. What about significance versus success? Which one comes first? How do you size those two things up?
Yeah, both great terms. And I really think it's short-sighted to not be developing, nurturing both of those concurrently from day one.
Okay.
What does happen often is that somebody gets on a path where they have a lot of success and they forget their why. They simply are focused on the how and the what. And all of a sudden, they have $10 million and they feel like, wow, if I disappeared tomorrow, who would care? What would they remember about me? They haven't done anything to really nurture how they're going to be remembered. And that is the significance. We hear a lot about, you know, guys who maybe in their early 50s decide they're more interested in significance and success. I don't like to really throw those in two different camps. I want to show people how to be significant from day one. And we have that in the millennials today, which I really, really love. Mm. They're more interested in the things that are legacy terms, how I'm going to be remembered, how I'm going to do something noble, how I'm going to make a difference. Then they're the people in past generations have been where they figure, well, I'll address those questions, you know, when I'm 70 years old.
Right.
And I love it when, you know, 23-year-old is really struggling with that. So I think they are more realistically looking at significance at early ages than previous generations have. It's a great thing.
Did you say that the significance was connected to your why? I'm kind of even taking some notes here while you're chatting. Did you say that your significance was connected to your why and your success was your how and your what? Did I hear that correctly?
Yeah. You could very easily go that way.
Yeah.
And quite frankly, Jared, I just recently had kind of a wake-up call in that I have a lot of things, you know, going on, a lot of things that are working well. And all of a sudden, I got this clear. I had a random encounter with somebody that I knew 23 years ago. And he reminded me of some of the things I was doing back then. And I thought, oh my gosh, I have drifted from my why into the how and what, because those are so easy to do. Mm-hmm. Man, we'll make another course, you know, sell another 50,000 people, you know, coming in that course. I get so enamored with the what and the how because they're so low hanging fruit, so easy to do, all the social media tools we've got. I needed to really stop myself and go back and revisit my why. Hmm. It's been a wonderful, wonderful experience and a reminder for me.
Yeah, that's great. So, you know, not to ask the same question again, somebody who's struggling with their why, what question would you ask them to try to pull that out of them if you were working with somebody? Does that make sense?
It does. And really, without begging the question, you can continue to ask why.
Yeah.
Gee, I want to make $10 million.
Why?
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't want to have to work so hard. Why? Well, I want to be able to spend more time with my family. Why? And you can back somebody down into the elements of that.
Yeah.
What is your why? What gets you up in the morning? I had a friend who recently retired from one of the auto manufacturing companies, and then he went through a really painful divorce after 37 years. Just broke my heart and his as well. But I talked to him and I says, you know, what are you going to do? And he says, well, I've got it figured out, you know, with my retirement and with Social Security and everything, I'm okay. I don't have to do anything. I said, no, David, what are you going to do? I'm not saying, are you going to be able to survive? I'm saying, what gets you up in the morning? Mm-hmm. You've got to define that. Otherwise, you've already started to tell your body, you can shut down.
Yeah.
And we see that again and again.
Yep.
People who don't have a clear purpose, who don't have a clear why, who don't know what they're doing to build significance, man, they've given their body the message, you can shut down.
And they do. And that's exactly what happens, isn't it?
Man, and I'm sure you see that in the work that you do.
Yeah.
You know, these guys in perfect health, 62 years old, they retire. Gee, they're just going to golf and fish. 2 years later, they're dead.
Yeah. Recently, I had a guy. He was 2 years away from retirement. He is a postal worker. He walks 5 miles a day, down from 12. He said recently he was up to 12, and he bumped it down to 5. And I said, when you retire, you need to come see us, and we need to talk about these things, because if you just start kind of shutting down, you lose your purpose of your job, you start becoming inactive because your body is used to walking 25 miles a day. That you can't do that to your body. You know what I mean? Like, it, all of those things are so connected. So that is a great way to put that. That is awesome. That's crazy.
Gotta have a why.
Exactly right. That is awesome. So you mentioned legacy a little bit, and that's a term that's getting thrown around a lot. A lot of books written on legacy. What does you kind of mentioned it already? Not to again re-ask the question. But what does legacy mean in your terms?
Yeah, in my terms, it's what are people going to know about Dan Miller 30 years from now, 50 years from now.
Oh, that's good.
If all I've done is just create a living, you know, just had cash flow in a business in order to live well, and then I'm gone. Boy, that's pretty sad.
Yeah.
Now, this doesn't have to be some grandiose kind of thing. You know, I don't have to have my name carved in marble columns around a university or anything. But I've got kids and grandkids. I want the meaning of my life to continue through them.
Yeah.
I have a son who's 38, Jared. His name is Jared.
No kidding. How's he spell it?
J-A-R-E-D.
Okay, yeah, I'm weird. J-E-R-R-I-D. Yeah.
So, yeah. So about 10 years ago, he came to me. You know, his last name is Miller.
Yeah.
He was living in Africa at the time. He said, would you be offended if I explored the idea of changing my last name? And I said, oh my gosh, that would be awesome. Miller's so common. But the first thing that I said when he asked me that is I said, Jared, I hope that my legacy goes far beyond just people remembering my last name.
Yeah.
What he did, now he had He's got a golden Rolodex with people all over the world. He did a lot of research, came up with a Swahili word, angaza. Angaza in Swahili means instrument of light. I mean, what daddy could be upset with a son who so intentionally chose a name that he wanted to represent his life rather than just what he had been handed down as a surname?
Wow, that is cool. That's cool that you understand that. So it wasn't like a you got defensive all of a sudden, you know what I mean, where you understand your legacy is bigger than just, you know, M-I-L-L-E-R on a piece of paper, you know what I mean?
That's right. Yeah. I got little grandkids running around with a different last name. I am thrilled with that.
Yeah.
But I want them to know, you know, who their papa is and what he stood for and have those principles that they carry on.
Do you intentionally try to leave a legacy, or do you intentionally try to live with, you know, intentionality and purpose, and is legacy a result? How, you know, which comes first in that equation? You know what I mean? Can you intentionally focus on leaving a legacy, or is that just a byproduct of you living a certain way?
Well, that's a great question. I don't know that I've thought about it exactly in that way, Jared. But for me, it's not like I get up in the morning and think, you know, what is my legacy?
Right.
No, I want to live fully every day. I mean, there's an old quotation from a second century disciple who says, the glory of God is man fully alive. I want to be fully alive. And I trust that the legacy is going to flow out of that.
As
a byproduct.
Absolutely. Yeah. And that's how we want to live. And I think that, I think you would agree that the millennials are into that. So, I mean, this isn't just a retiree conversation about legacy. You know what I mean? Like, I don't think that the millennials would call it legacy, but they're in that flow of wanting to live with a why and live with impact. And as a result, I think legacy will flow out of that. Kind of like what you're saying.
Absolutely. Yep. Like, you're exactly right.
That's awesome. So I'll leave it with this. Talk about 48 Days to the Work You Love. It's revisited and re-edited. I read the book a long time ago, I think before you re-edited it. I mean, that is like your go-to book. Where can people find that?
Well, it's been a really beautiful ride with 48 Days to the Work You Love. You know, that grew out of a Sunday school class. I had no intention of that becoming a book. I was just encouraging people on a weekly basis in Sunday school class, but they kept coming in droves and sharing their stories and asking questions. Yeah. So the 48 days material just came out of that, talking with people who are going through often unexpected and unwelcome kind of transitions in their career and life. So I put it together as just a 3-ring binder, sold a couple $1 million worth of that. Then publishers were tracking me down. And we published it in a hardback form in 2005. I did a light update in 2010, then did a radical complete update in 2015 for the 10th anniversary edition. And it continues. As a matter of fact, I got a royalty check yesterday.
Nice.
Which is kind of nice. They just keep coming in.
Yeah.
So it's kind of my key body of work, although, you know, I've done a lot of things that flow out of that. But that really is the core message of, you know, how do you figure out how God has uniquely gifted you? And then what are you going to do with that so that you wake up every day ready to do something that is meaningful, purposeful, and profitable?
Yeah, it's a phenomenal mission statement, and I love it. I think it's a great book. And again, I think it spreads across a lot of people in a huge demographic. So we just appreciate the work that you've done on that. Here, I'll leave you with this question here, and we can end on this one. What is Dan Miller's legacy? What do you want to be remembered for most?
I have three amazing kids, and I have 16 grandkids.
Wow.
One of them today, it's her fifth birthday. I've been on the phone with her multiple times today. She's so excited about it.
Not that late.
We've had three different birthday parties for her already.
Wow.
But I've been on the phone with her because it's a special day. Boy, those moments, you cannot take me away from those. I have the privilege of working with a lot of people and really going deep in their lives, and I count that an extreme privilege and obligation to do that well. But I have much deeper obligation to my kids and grandkids. So when you hear legacy, I'm thinking ahead, 6 generations from now.
Yeah.
the impact of what I'm doing now, not by just remembering wonderful great-granddad Dan Miller. You know, I don't care about that. But to have a work ethic, to know that integrity means something, to know that your word is your bond. Yeah. Those are the things that are my legacy. The values and the principles that I live by, I want those to be perpetuated because I believe in them so thoroughly. They weren't things I just dreamed up, but I believe in them so thoroughly. And to see those being played out in my kids and grandkids and those people that I have the privilege of interacting with their lives, that to me is a legacy that cannot be stopped.
Well, I sure hope you enjoyed this conversation with Dan Miller. So much there to dissect, but I want to echo what Dan said right at the end of that interview. Grandparents and retirees, I want to speak to you directly. You have such an opportunity to leave a legacy and an impact to your kids and your grandkids. I hope you take Dan's word to heart. I want to thank you so much for listening to this episode of Repurpose. Just a reminder, this show is based on a book by Ben Tejas called Repurpose, The Untold Story of Retirement in America. Dan Miller actually endorsed that book. If you want the first two chapters of that book totally free, it's all about finding your new purpose in retirement. Go to TejasFinancial.com and click on Heard Us on the Radio for your free gift just for listening here today. And as usual, a big thanks to Faith Radio for helping us sponsor this program. If you missed any or all of this content, visit myfaithradio.com to hear or download the podcast there. I'm Jared Sebesta. We will see you next time on Repurposed.